everybody thinks they have ADHD, and the NHS waiting list is something, is it a year or something?
8 years now.
8 years. I want to just really debunk some stuff with you because there's so much noise online.
All of these women who were like maybe where I was 3 years ago, who were hearing this, oh, everyone thinks they've got ADHD nowadays. That's going to put them off wanting to go to the doctors.
If someone's listening, they have ADHD, what would be some of your, like, say, top three tips for coping? Guys, Ellie Middleton is on the pod! Welcome to So Wrong It's Right,
thank
my angel.
You.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I've been following your work for a while now, and obviously knowing that you were going to be a guest, I've been kind of deep diving further into some of the stuff you've done. It's all so interesting, and obviously for me, a lot of it is very relatable. For my listeners who don't know so much about you, do you want to give a little intro to you and your story?
Yeah, so essentially I was diagnosed with both autism and ADHD about 2.5 years ago now. So I was 24 when I got diagnosed, and then just started talking online about how nuts it was that I didn't get diagnosed till I was in my mid-20s. Like, growing up, I was always misdiagnosed with anxiety, depression, under, like, the NHS mental health team, all of that stuff. So I was sort of like, how has nobody picked it up until this point? And then I guess it just spiraled from there online. So since then, I've, like, written a couple of books. I've done a TED Talk about, like, late diagnosis and masking and, yeah, sort of just digging into why a lot of people are getting diagnosed later in life and the ways that we think about autism and ADHD. I think, like, trying to change that stereotypical idea of, like, it's the naughty little schoolboy or it's whatever, and just sort of, yeah, translate what the traits are on paper into people's real life experiences so people have more of an understanding of it.
For sure. And I feel like you and I have fairly similar stories, actually, because I was listening to your TED Talk and other bits that you've done. And I also didn't get officially diagnosed with ADHD until I was in my early 20s. And I had battles with what at the time were displaying as anxiety, depression, you know, couldn't cope, overstimulated, until, you know, finally a great psychiatrist that I got in front of said, you know, has anyone ever talked about ADHD? And, you know, we'll go on to this in more detail, but it kind of, like you said, the light came on, my whole world changed, so many things made sense. But I want to just really debunk some stuff with you because there's so much noise online. And I feel like I want this episode to be really informative for listeners and viewers. And just to kind of, like, clear up some of the myths, I know there's an NHS official description of ADHD, but how do you kind of define it to people when you're talking about it? Like, what is ADHD?
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult one to try and explain.
I know.
So the NHS definition is more about, like, a behavioural difference. But I don't think that sort of goes into it. For me, I would say it basically just means that I have one mode, which is on. Like, I can't go slow. I'm always at 100 miles an hour, and that my brain is just firing off in different directions all of the time. I think that's, like, the big one for me, that it's just go, 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 and fire, 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 fire. And that makes it difficult to, like, sit down and concentrate. It makes it difficult to keep on top of life. But it also means that I'm always doing a million things at once to try and keep myself occupied. So I think for me, it's, like, maybe a difference in, like, the speed of my brain and, like, the intensity with which I move through the world, maybe, of, like, everything is, like, all or nothing. I'm either completely, I've got a tattoo that's, like, utterly obsessed or completely uninterested, like a light switch. God. And I feel like that's my, either I'm, like, in something or I can't do it. I'm not interested whatsoever. So I think it's, like, the, intensity in which I experience the world and, like, the speed at which my brain works, I think.
Yes. Someone explained it to me once, which always has resonated with me, that, you know, say a neurotypical brain is we think of it as a computer, it has 5 tabs open. If you have ADHD, you have 20 to 25 open at all times that are all firing off and talking to you, and it's like that noisy head, basically.
Yeah.
At the same time, you were diagnosed with autism, and I think this is another question that a lot of people be asking: what is autism and how is it different from ADHD?
So a lot of people are actually both. Like, research now, I think a lot of people, well, we know a lot of people go undiagnosed with either or, but a lot of people actually will only ever get diagnosed with one when they actually have both. Because going back not that long, about 10 years ago, you couldn't get diagnosed with both. They thought it was one or the other. So I think that's something that's, like, really starting to hopefully like change people's thoughts at the moment. But for me, autism is more of like a social difference and a difference in like the sensory aspect of the world. So I guess like the social and communication side, like I can't read between the lines. I need people to be really direct with me. Like I will just, some people will go straight over my head if someone's like hinting at something but not saying it, it will just go straight over.
Got it.
I think like the social side is like, growing up, I would always like get into one friendship group and I'd be fine like making friends.
Yes.
And then I'd do something like wrong, but I wouldn't know what I'd done wrong, but I would upset someone in some way, or I'd say something, or I'd do something that wasn't liked, and then I wouldn't be allowed to be part of that friendship group anymore, and I'd be out and then into. So it was always like sort of always doing these like social like faux pas without really knowing what you'd actually done wrong or said wrong, or have I come across as rude, have I done, you know, just differences in the way that we communicate, I think,
yes,
that are always like misunderstood, a lot of being misunderstood and misunderstanding, I think, yeah, is like the main thing. And then I guess on the sensory side, I guess similar to ADHD, where there's like so much noise internally, I think like the autism is like the external world is so intense. Like if I'm sort of like, I don't know, in a supermarket where there's like the music on in the background and then there's people having conversations and there's like trolleys squeaking on the floor and then there's a really bright lights and there's just like all of these different things going on, it's like all coming in at level 1,000 in my brain. So I'd say that's like sort of the main ways that the autism shows up. And I think like having the combination of both is probably a lot of why neither got diagnosed, because it's like you think of ADHD as like chaotic, all over the place, disorganized, like running around in circles, bouncing off the walls. And then if you think of autism, you think of like structure, routine, like wearing the same things every day, liking to have things planned out, liking to be organized.
So it's bit.
It's almost like the two are like sort of covering each up a bit, because it's like I don't appear to be someone that's like obsessed with structure and routine, because I can't bloody stick to a routine because my ADHD is making me late all of the time. And it's like those two needs there.
That's so interesting. At the beginning of your TED talk, which is still out there, guys, if you want to listen to it or watch it, you talk about the when you knew you were different at different ages, and you're like, I knew I was different when I was 7 because I didn't want to make new friends. I knew I was different when I was a teenager because of X, Y, Z. So you felt that difference through the years. We touched on it briefly at the top, but how did you eventually get your diagnosis after knowing that you were different for so many years, but no one actually going, hey, I think I know why.
Yeah. So it was actually like luck, really. So I got counselling through the job that I was doing at the time. I was just like working in a call centre through lockdown. And I brought up a like bicker that I'd had with my then boyfriend in counselling. So it was the Euros, the last time that we got to the final.
Okay.
And it was on a Sunday night and I couldn't get the Monday off work, but my partner could get the Monday off work. So I'd said beforehand, I was like, okay, if we win, we were going out in Leeds to watch it. I was like, if we win, I'll stay out and I'll just be hungover at work, like whatever. It's like a one-off thing.
Yeah.
If we lose, I'm going to get the last train home because there's no point in me being tired at work the next day.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, whatever you do, I'll do the same. So if you go home, I'll go home with you. If you stay out, I'll stay out with you. So I was like, okay, cool. And then it happened and we lost. And I was like, right, are we going to go get the train home? And he was like, I'm not going home. And I was like, oh, but you said if I would go home, you would go home. And he was like, well, you know, things change. I'm going to go meet my mates, whatever.
How did you react to it? Did it completely throw you?
Yeah. I just absolutely like had a meltdown basically. Yeah. And she was like, what bothered you about it? And I was like, well, you know, she was like, is it the fact that it was meant to be a good day and it ended on this sour note? Was it the fact that you were like anxious about going home on your own? Like, what was it? And I was like, no, it's the fact that he said that he would come home with me if I was going home. And then he didn't do what he said he was going to do. I was like, if people say something to me and then like, I take that as like Bible, if someone says something and it really bothers me if that changes or if they don't mean what they've said. And then she was like, has it ever been looked into why you take things so literally? And I was like, no, but I think I know what you're hinting at here. So I like went away. So that sort of
and
led
did you
down,
know what she was hinting at?
Yeah, so autism, I knew that was autism. So I was like, then sort of went down the autism rabbit hole first. And then that sort of like led me to the ADHD I sort of got into that like neurodiversity bubble, that sort of led me to the ADHD as well. And I was like, whoa, like this is it. But it turns out her son, like the counsellor's son that I just randomly got assigned to through this like workplace platform, he was autistic and ADHD. So I think she's probably like heard, because people hear that example and they're like, oh, but a lot of people would be mad if their boyfriend didn't go home when he said he was going to go home. But I think she'd obviously heard like maybe little things that I was like saying or doing up until that point.
The way you described it resonated with probably things she'd seen in her kids.
Yeah. So I think like it was basically so lucky that I happened to have a counsellor that had experience of seeing those things and was able to like pick up on that.
How did you feel then when you got those diagnoses? Because I was just going to, you know, compare kind of stories with you of how you felt. Did you feel any embarrassment about those labels or shame, or did it just feel like relief?
I think at the start it was like definitely just like pure relief of just like, I found the answer. Like, it's not my fault that all of these things have gone wrong. Like, it's not my fault that I've had such a hard time. Like, I think the start was like pure validation. I think as time's gone on, there's a bit of like, well, quite a lot of like grief that comes with it as well, because it's like the first of realizing, well, what could have been different if someone would have picked that up before. Like, I was going to CAMHS, which is like the Children and Adolescents Mental Health Service with the NHS. I was, when I was like 15 to 19, I was there every week. I was seeing a psychologist and a key worker and a psychiatrist. I was on antidepressants. I was seeing someone every week. And it's like, why couldn't they have, you know, that's their job. How have they not seen it? Like, how would my life have been different if, you know, I wouldn't have had to drop out of school. I wouldn't have had to decline my uni offers. I wouldn't have had all these like horrible like friendships or relationships that have gone wrong. Like, I think that shows up a lot. And then I think there's all also like the grief of like, the first feeling is like, oh, this is just who I am. And then it's like, oh, this is just who I am. Like, I think when you think it's anxiety and depression, you sort of have this hope in your brain of like, one day I'm going to find the perfect antidepressant, or I'm going to find the perfect therapy, and I'm going to be fixed, and I'm going to be this perfect human, and it's all going to go away one day. But then when you realize that it's autism and ADHD, it's almost like, yeah, I might, you know, find ways of making life easier for myself. I might not have these like pits of bad mental health, but it's not going anywhere. Like, this is how my brain is going to be every day for the rest of my life.
Work it out of how you're going to manage it.
Yeah.
Because when I remember when I got diagnosed, I ended up in front of a psychiatrist because I believed I was anxious and depressed. And so I was in there with her. And I, again, it was a bit of luck because she was a private psychiatrist that my mum had found and kind of basically was like, you need to, you know, you can't keep like say going high, low, high, low. But she had a special interest in ADHD and autism. But that wasn't why I was seeing her. And I spoke to her for like an hour. And at the end, she went, has anyone ever talked to you about ADHD? And I was like, no, I'm depressed. And she's like, no, you're not. And I was like, bitch, I've been crying for 2 days. I think I fucking know. And she was like, no, you, yeah, you're feeling depressed, but because you have this ADHD, this, you don't know about it, you don't know how to cope, everything you're doing is making it worse. And it had been kind of floated when I was a kid, but like, again, you know, I'm a little bit older than you, but it was like that generation of like, women don't typically have ADHD. Like, you know, it doesn't really make sense. And also all her stuff's really organized and she's always presentable. So it just doesn't, yeah, she sometimes, you know, does something really impulsive and, you know, random, but maybe she just wants attention and whatever. But I remember when I got the diagnosis and I know she sent me home with some homework. And again, for me, it was like the light came on and I was like, oh my God, so many things make sense. But then there was this another part of me that just had instant like kind of embarrassment, because when all I thought of when I heard ADHD was that kid at school, a boy who would have like unbrushed hair, be like eating his pencils, be like climbing a tree. And I was like, that's not me. I'm a pretty girl. Like, you know, so I took my diagnosis and I took the freedom of knowing about myself and I learned about it, but I kept it like really a secret. I didn't tell anyone, like in my friendship group, or, you know, I definitely wouldn't have put it on social media. And then post Love Island, I remember it was like a couple of weeks post, I just randomly on a story was like babbling away and I went, it's probably because I've got ADHD. And I just said it as accident. And then my DMs just went mental. And I was like, oh God, I felt like I'd like let this dirty secret slip out, because, you know, going back 5-6 years ago, there weren't creators like you and people weren't talking about it. And I didn't realise how many people, one, were living in shame, and two, didn't have a diagnosis at all. What do you think about the kind of the gender gap between diagnosis? I think it's getting better because of women like you and myself and so many others talking about it, and so many women going, oh, hey, that sounds like me. And, you know, I think the professional side as well have woken up to the fact that we are great at masking. Is that something that you hear a lot, that you know, that gap between the women and the men?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is like, I think basically the way that I see it is like, if it's not identified literally when you're a toddler,
yes,
then as a girl, you get socialized or taught to be polite, to sit still, to be nice, to be meek, to be mellow, to be organized, to be in control, to be this like perfect little human.
Yeah.
So that's like sort of for everybody, regardless of ADHD, that's like a masking of its own kind, learning to be this perfect little girl. And that in itself then covers up all of the ADHD traits. Yes. So it's like, if no one's seen it before that sort of happens, that you're socialised in that way, then the chance of them seeing it is getting smaller and smaller because it's getting pushed further and further inside of you. And I think, you know, it's not as sort of black and white as boy ADHD and girl ADHD.
Yes.
It's more, this is the way that girls are currently socialized, and that means that it's not as obvious. But like, I think when I look back at like my time with CAMS, and you know, spoke to my mum loads about like how did no one see it, like how did no one pick that up, like they were literally like psychiatrists seeing me all the time, like and my mum's like, but they couldn't have, because at that point, by that point when you were in secondary school, you were like, all you cared about was fitting in. Like, like I was literally like, I would change myself so much and just become this like Barbie doll almost of like, this is going to be, I'm going to be the perfect popular girl and I'm going to fit in and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Like there was no Ellie left. Like Ellie was pushed so far inside, and my mum's like, all they could see at the time was these panic attacks that you were having, these sobbing sessions that you were having. Like that's all the information that they could see on the outside, because what was actually going on with the ADHD was so far on the inside.
We just talked about masking. Masking is that it's basically your way of kind of covering up what's going on in here and what's going on in the head. You don't act on it, and you kind of do what you can to fit into society and be quote unquote normal. What's the difference with stimming, and what is stimming?
Yeah, so stimming is like self-stimulating behaviour is what it's like short for.
Fine.
So it's like self-soothing behaviours. So like it might be like a lot of people, like I used to always play with my hair, and my dad would be like, Ellie, stop playing with your hair when people are eating. But for me, like I obviously didn't know at the time, but that was like soothing for me to just like have the feeling of my hair in my hands. Or like now I use the fidget toy.
Oh, yeah, show that to the camera so like, everyone knows what it is. It's so cool.
A stim toy. So that's like the repeated movement of me just like having that in my hands to move is like keeping me soothed and regulated.
Okay, so self-soothing behaviours.
Yeah, so it might be like like rocking backwards and forwards on your feet or something, rocking movement can be like quite soothing. Or it might be like listening to the same song over and over again, because that like soothes your brain if you're like stressed out or whatever. But basically like generally like repeated movements
behaviors
or whatever, but it's something that you're doing to like soothe yourself, I guess.
On the subject of diagnosis, and obviously there's so much awareness now, and some professionals have come out and said, you know, all this awareness is now causing a massive problem because everybody thinks they have ADHD, and the NHS waiting list is something, is it a year or
eight
something?
8 years now.
8 years.
Yeah, BBC just came out with a report. In some areas, it's up to 8 years in the UK, yeah.
So that's a whole other conversation problem in itself. But do you see any flip side to this awareness where, because I think I see a little bit of this in my friendship groups and you know, online, where people are trying to self-diagnose, and then maybe also they're self-diagnosing when, just because you lost your car keys doesn't mean you have ADHD. Like, what's your kind of take on that?
People call like all of that like self-diagnosing, but I think there's actually like two separate parts of it. Like there's the one side where it's like the over-labeling, like we've always, it's important to be careful with the language that we're using, where it's like, if someone's a bit of a clean freak, I'm a bit OCD.
Yes.
Or if someone has a bad day, I'm depressed. No, you're not. Don't use those terms when it's not, like, don't sort of minimize the actual challenges that those people face. I think that's like the one side of it, of like over-labeling. But I think the self-diagnosing side is actually a completely separate issue to that.
Mm.
I think, like, a lot of people who self-diagnose, it's not just that they're watching one TikTok and going, yeah, I'm self-diagnosed with ADHD. It's that they've watched one TikTok and then they've spent 3 hours on NHS websites and then they've read two books and then they've spoken to people and they've done all of the online questionnaires. Like, they've actually gone through the diagnostic process that you would go through with a doctor, but just had to do it themselves.
Yeah.
And I think, like, on that side of things, yeah, we get all these people like, oh, everyone thinks that they've got ADHD nowadays. Everyone thinks that they're autistic now. But it's actually, you know, these people that are realizing later in life and having to self-diagnose is that they've been let down their whole entire lives because nobody has stopped to notice it in them. No teachers, no doctors, no whatever have like highlighted it in them. So it's actually that they've been let down their whole entire life and they're currently being let down because they can't go to the NHS and get a diagnosis. What's the worst case scenario of somebody never getting diagnosed? It's like that they spend their whole life feeling that they're a rubbish person. Yeah. They go through these awful like depression cycles that we like have had before we were diagnosed.
Yeah.
You know, we've got an increased risk of suicide. We've got an increased risk of ending up in prison. We've got an increased risk of eating disorders. We've got an increased risk of like spending money that we don't have and
addiction,
getting ourselves into debt. And,
alcohol,
yeah, all of these things. Like, there are the worst case scenario of spending your life undiagnosed is bad. It's really bad. What's the worst case scenario of someone self-diagnosing, thinking that they've got ADHD, but they don't actually have ADHD? Mm. Well, they can't access medication because they don't have a medical diagnosis. So they're not taking away their supplies from other people. They can't access like funding or, you know, support from the government. So they're not taking money away from other people. The worst case scenario is like, I don't know, maybe they're a bit kinder to themselves. Maybe they buy a few planners. Maybe they like use a few apps. Like, the worst case scenario for someone wrongly self-diagnosing is a lot less bad than the worst case scenario if they don't, you know, they never get that validation and they spend their whole life thinking, I'm a piece of shit. But all of these women who were like maybe where I was 3 years ago, who were hearing this, oh, everyone thinks they've got ADHD nowadays, that's going to put them off wanting to go to the doctors because they're going to think, oh, I don't want to jump on the bandwagon and I don't want everyone to think that I'm just like looking for attention or like looking for clout or whatever it might be. That's going to put them off from getting the answer, which has like had this massive positive impact on my life. And it's like, I think that's sad to think that, yeah, the media... You think of it like, we think of it as like an abstract thing, but it's like, no, this is having a real impact on how people like think about it and the course of their lives, essentially, if they choose to get a diagnosis or not.
That's actually such a refreshing take on it and such a thought-provoking one. It's definitely actually, it's even putting a bit in perspective of how I feel about talking about ADHD, because I'll be completely real, like for a while, I think really until I started the podcast, I stepped away from talking about it because I felt like, because so many people were talking about it and a lot of celebrities were coming forward saying they have ADHD. Like you say, whether they do or they don't, whatever, is kind of actually irrelevant. People's reaction to it was becoming then quite negative. Oh, I was another... Just when I was like, you know, going into an interview, whereas 4 or 5 years ago when no one was talking about it, I was kind of like, oh, I think it's just, you know, I'm kind of scared, but it's a really powerful thing to do. Whereas then I got to the other side where if someone bring it up, I'd be like, kind of like, oh, yeah, like kind of shut it down because I was worried. I was like, God, am I feeding a problem where I'm causing big NHS waiting lists? And actually, the way you've just explained that is so such the right way to look at it. Like you say, what's the worst thing that can happen with someone thinking they have ADHD? What's the worst thing that can happen if they do have it and they don't get help? It's pretty fucking bad.
Yeah.
You're quite open about medication, that you take medication for ADHD. And I know, obviously, we cannot give out medical advice on this podcast, nor am I going to attempt to. And it's one of the questions that people DM me a lot saying, I'm not on medication, but it's the right decision for me right now. I still battle some days whether it is the right decision. So I've never gone on the non-medication bandwagon because I actually think that I make quite a lot of sacrifices by not being on it. So it's a very personal choice, as is being on it. And I, if I was on a medicine, I wouldn't be telling people, because you have to go and be diagnosed. And there's a medication for you that you or I cannot tell the listener what it is. But putting medication to one side, if someone's listening, they have ADHD, what would be some of your, like, say, top three tips for coping that you, someone could instrument today? And I know it's a very personal thing, but I have some that I know I've shared with people, and I think universally there's things that do help.
Yeah. The first one, I think, would be, like, let go of the idea that you have to do things the hard way. Mm. I think we have this, like, idea now in society that it's, like, the only way that you achieve something is by putting in the hard work, and, like, don't take the easy way out, and, like, you've got, like, this, like, grind thing. And it's, like, actually, why do I have to... Why life... The point of life isn't to be stressed out and for things to be hard. The point of life is to, like, have a nice time. And if there's an easy way of getting somewhere, why would I not take the easy route?
Yeah.
And I think that shows up in so many, you know, like, people then will have shame of, like, oh, I can't buy ready meals because that's, you know, I've got to make a meal from scratch because that's, like, the proper way to do it. Well, if it's going to mean the difference between you eating tonight or you not eating tonight, buy the ready meal.
Yeah.
You know, if you can afford it, get a cleaner. That's not you, like, being a rubbish person. That's you going, actually, I know that's really hard for myself. That's a smart decision to make, not a lazy one.
So basically, so utilise, depending on what you have access to, make your life easier.
Make your life as easy as you possibly can. Don't think that you've got to, like, struggle through for the sake of struggling through. I guess, like, linked to that is, like, don't be scared to lean on the people around you.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the time, like, now we have this, like, hyper individual world of, like, I've got, like, I live on my own. So it's like, I think, I've got to be able to run a house on my own. I've got to be able to cook for myself. I've got to be able to do everything for myself. I've got to be this hyper individual person. You know, I can't rely on anyone else. That's not how humans work. Mm. Like, ever since the cavemen, we've been in tribes. People have lent on people. People have asked for people for different things. So, like, it's okay if I need to ask my mum to help me do some laundry, because we weren't made to do all of these things and have time to do laundry and have time to go to the gym and feed ourselves and do our work and all of this stuff. So don't be afraid to, like, lean on the people around you. What would be a third one? I feel like it's finding that balance of, like, specific ones and then, like, more general things.
No, I put you on the spot there as well, and because they're both really good. They're really good tips, actually, because when I talk to people, my tips are always so much more linear. I'm like, don't drink loads of caffeine. Yeah. Exercise
is a game. That's where there's
the endorphins.
Annoying things where it's like when your mum or my mum, her answer to everything is like, just have an early night. And you're like, that's not the answer. Yeah. My life is over. Don't just tell me to. I'm not just tired. And then you actually have a good night's sleep. And then you're like, oh, that did actually work. I think that's the thing with exercise. When someone's like, just exercise. When you're in the pits of depression, you're so overwhelmed. You can't even shower. You think, don't tell me to go to the gym. Like, where do you think I can't even get in the shower? How am I going to go to the gym? But when you actually get to a point in life when you are able to do that, you actually see, actually going to the gym every morning is the best thing for me. I think there's, like, so many, like, little, the new book is basically, like, all these, like, little tiny tips that seem ridiculous but make life so much easier.
So the new book, which is out now, How to Be You, and it's your second book.
Yeah.
What you said there, so there's lots of tips and basically actionable advice in there.
Yeah, so the way that I have structured it is around the 8 executive functioning skills. So there's thought to be a 30% developmental delay in these skills in people with ADHD.
Okay.
And these functions or skills are thought to only develop to 80% of other people's.
Yes.
And these skills are like working memory. So that's like all the things that you need to keep track of at the same time, like organization, planning, prioritization, emotional regulation. It's basically like air traffic control for your brain. So in the same way that air traffic control is like making sure everything takes off at the right time, there's no crashes, like everything runs smoothly, these skills are what's in your brain, making sure that your brain runs smoothly. And then obviously for us, it's not very smooth. Mm-hmm. So I built it like around those skills. And for each of the skill, it was like, well, what is this thing? What is this function? Why might it be more difficult for us? Like, how does that show up? And then, like, how is the way that we've currently been told to do things, like, bullshit, basically? Like, that we're told that we have to be able to remember everything. Well, why can I not just write it down?
Yeah.
Or we have to always keep a brave face and regulate our emotions. Well, why can't we just have a cry if we need to have a cry?
Yeah.
So sort of breaking down all of the stuff that we've been told we should do around it and why actually it's okay to let go of some of that. But each skill, there's like five practical things of like, here are some things that might be helpful for you to have a go.
Yeah.
Know that you're probably not going to stick with any of them forever. Like, you're probably going to do one for 2 weeks and then your brain's going to go, sorry, not interested in that anymore.
Yeah.
And then you can come back to it later and find something else. Like, it's not like you have to follow these steps every day for the rest of your life and then you will be a perfect human. It's like, actually, I know right now I'm having a really hard time with, I've got a big project at work and I'm struggling to plan it or prioritize what order I need to do stuff in. Let me look at the tips of planning and prioritization and see if any of those are going to point me in the right direction. So that's sort of like the way that I wanted to do it, of like, sort of like a blockbusters for these tips of like, take what you want, what's going to be helpful now. Don't feel like you've got to use that forever. Like, come back and find another one that's going to help you in future.
I think it's really cool how you've obviously achieved so much, but you're still like really honest about that, you know, it's hard sometimes, it's messy, like it's not perfect. And I think that's a, you know, an important thing for people to hear, because I bet you, because I get this a little bit. It's like, if you think about little Ellie and you think now you're a published author, you're a public speaker, you're a content creator, do you want to, like, would you be like, I want to tell you everything's going to be all right? Because that's what I always think when I see a picture of like little Liv and she's like undiagnosed, anxious, like mess. And then everything does work out, you know?
Yeah.
Do you feel that way as well?
Yeah.
Would you believe how your life's turned out?
Not at all. Like, even like looking back, like literally even looking back 3 years,
yeah,
like literally it's all happened so, so quickly. And I think I've been really, really lucky actually that all of this has come so quickly after my diagnosis, because it held off some of that grief for quite a long time, because it was like, I don't have time to think about the like, how shit it is that I didn't get diagnosed till later, because I'm doing all of these amazing things,
yeah,
and I'm doing things that I never thought I was going to be able to do. So like, it was sort of really like cheesily, but it was like sort of enforcing on me all the time, like, it's all happened the way it's supposed to happen, like, which I think feels minimizing to say, because you're like, no one should ever have had to go through that, like, teenage years of not being able to get out of bed. Like, that's not something that, you know, it's, you don't want to be like, oh, that happened it didn't happen so I could get here, like, but it did all work out in the end. But yeah,
it's such a good chat. I feel like there's so much in there that, you know, you've been so honest and so transparent, but also there's actionable stuff in there, which I hope, you know, listeners and viewers will take, you know, some information from. Because, like, you know, there is still a lot of confusion online, and a lot of, and I think when there's so much information, then it's, you know, we went from having no information about these subjects
to overload.
And then unfortunately, you know, probably not intentionally, but then you have people sometimes not providing the right information, and there's misconceptions and conspiracy theories and whatever. But they were so good. Should we play a little game?
Yes, let's go for it.
So, Ellie, this game, if you're not familiar with it, is so wrong, it's right. I'll read statements and then we'll decide if they're wrong, right, or just so wrong that they're right. Right, before we get into the box, have you got a so wrong, it's right from me, Ellie?
I have, and there's like a bit of a story behind it. So this question set me into a spiral, because I feel like it's one of those questions that feels like, it's like a little quiz, and it's like, I know you're not going to like be nasty, but it's like, I know that the answer to this is going to be like judged, and it's
okay.
Like, do you know, it's like when someone asks you like your favorite band and you're like, oh,
it feels like so reflective of who you are,
and then like my brain goes into a spiral of like, well, what if everyone else gives funny answers and then I give a serious one, and then I look really weird because I've given a serious answer, and then what if I try and give a funny answer but I'm not funny, so then it's just a flop. So I think a work in progress so wrong it's right for me is just say the flop, because I think I get so in my head now, or we all get so in our head when we've spent our whole lives accidentally getting things wrong without realizing, that we just, I now will like freeze because I'm like, oh well, I don't want to say the wrong thing and I don't want to offend anyone. Just say the flop.
It might not be funny.
It might be wrong. It might not go well. But it's better to just say it rather than spiral. Like, is it worth the spiral? No, not really.
No.
Like, don't lose sleep over your so wrong, it's right.
That's amazing. I trust you to have the most articulate and thought provoking so wrong, it's right of the whole series so far. We love it. Amazing. Oh God, this is a. Well, I'm not going to give judgment actually. Sleeping in your makeup.
It's wrong, but sometimes it has to be done. Yeah.
It is wrong because it's just bad for you on every level. And do you know what it is? It's not just like, come on, it's not great for your skin, but it's, people make it so much more dramatic than it is. The very, very I can't remember the last time I've done it. It's the feeling in the morning.
I can't get to sleep with it on my face. I can just like feel it on my skin.
I'm guessing obviously like you're probably like me with sensory stuff. Like the minute I leave here in a cab, I'm face wiping. Yeah. I love being glam, but I cannot bear the feeling of it. Leaving your friends on red for weeks.
I'm the worst person in the world for that. Oh, I don't know. It's a hard one because it's like, I know that it's not nice and I know that it's not nice to be left on red either. But also, I think it's not normal that we now think that you have to be 24/7 contactable to be friends.
It's not wrong or it's right. It's not wrong or right because, like you say, you should get back to people. But I think it's like we should all have more of a realistic view of, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't have to be texting someone 24/7 to be mates. Yeah,
100%. Spending a small fortune on a new hobby that you're 100% convinced will be your new passion in life, but quitting with immediate effect.
I think definitely so wrong, it's right. I think I've got to the point now where it's like, I know when I'm doing it. Like, I know that, like, I'm going to be bored of it, like, next week.
What are some hobbies that you've picked up and dropped?
I started a baking business for, like, 2 weeks in lockdown. I was like, I'm going to... You know, when everyone was, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do... Why did I think that? I'd never even, like, baked before. I was like, yeah, this is my life calling.
This is my new passion.
Yeah.
Starting a new book before you finished the last one?
That's wrong. It's something that I wish that I could do because it does stop me from reading more. Because if I start reading a book and I'm not interested in it, but my brain is like, no, you have to finish it because then it's incomplete.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same as you. I could never, even if I hate it and it's so boring, I won't let myself not finish it. I'm on holiday and my husband can like swap from one book to another. And I'm like, weren't you just reading another book? Like, how does your brain like no understand the two stories? Just like, yeah, wrong. Telling people off for queue jumping.
I'm guilty. I get so... I'm normally, like, a very calm... Mm. Like, I'm not a confrontational person at all. But when it's something like this, my blood boils. Like, I have to try so hard not to, like, literally shout. I will, like, say, like, there's a queue.
Do you feel like you... Do you want to call people out on wrongs? Like, are you, like, if you see someone doing something that's
It will wrong, really bother yeah. me, yeah.
I think I'm so... Do you know what? I feel like I'm a bit, two extremes. And anyone that knows me will completely relate to this. It just depends on you catch me. Because what are you doing? Or other times, you don't just feel a bit defeated. I just like, oh, I don't fucking care.
Yeah.
Take my bag while you're at it. Like, I just don't care. Like, you know, you've had such a week and then someone just does something you think, yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
I'm going to shit on my foot and be done with it. Thank you so much. Loved having you as a guest. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Guys, you can buy Ellie's new book now in all
bookshops, everywhere.
Bookshops.